Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Let It Roll, the insanely ambitious musical history podcast hosted by Nate Wilcox. We've covered the early history of rock and roll, country music in the 20th century, the rise of hip-hop, disco, electronic dance music, and heavy metal. Stay tuned for our histories of Broadway, opera, punk rock, jazz, blues, ragtime, Latin music, and gospel. Follow the Let It Roll podcast on Twitter at Let It Rollcast, and check out our website at letitrollpodcast.com. Let It Roll is a Pantheon podcast, and you can listen to more great podcasts at www.pantheonpodcast.com. Today, Nate and new Let It Roll intern Ivan DeHaas continue the Three Kings of Emo Rap series with a look at the Lil Peep documentary, Everybody's Everything. Email us at letitrollpodcast@gmail.com. Pop in those earbuds and enjoy.
It's time to Let It Roll. I'm your host, Nate Wilcox, and once again, welcoming back Ivan DeHaas, the Let It Roll intern, to continue our discussion of the three kings of emo rap with king number two, Lil Peep. And we're going to be discussing the Amazon Prime Video documentary, Everybody's Everything, directed by Sebastian Jones and Ramez Selyan. Ivan, welcome back.
Hey, Nate. Thanks again for having me on.
Sure. So another heavy, depressing emo rap tale. Tell us quickly, like, where is Lil Peep seen in the constellation of emo rap figures?
Lil Peep is seen generally as one of the most defining crossover artists who mixes a variety of different genres. That was one of the main points of the documentary. And that was also kind of the main appeal of his music. There's a great deal of, acoustic appeal to his music with some R&B mixed in. But at the same time, there was definitely a relatively strong trap influence and very influential figure, super groundbreaking. And, in the 6 years since his death, his impact has only really continued to be shown.
Yeah, I know that's the case in our car. My 10-year-old daughter is quite big on Lil Peep and Extension, and especially Lil Peep, though. And I was kind of quick to write him off. He sounded like Chemical Romance with trap beats to me when I first heard him. It wasn't really until his death that I paid any attention to his songs. And for my dollar, there's some powerful work there. It was... I think he did combine. He created something new by combining existing forms, and it kind of had the swagger and the doom feel of trap with all the open emotionalism that comes through the emo tradition. Particularly, I don't feel like he's somebody who is going back and studying Rites of Spring or Husker Du or, 80s or 90s emo. But I do feel, or even Dashboard Confessional. But I do feel like he was somebody who had grown up on My Chemical Romance and other emo, the big emo groups of the 2000s. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Absolutely. They mentioned that in the documentary. A record executive sort of describes his music as being reminiscent almost of the likes of Green Day and My Chemical Romance, especially, but with a more modern flair that seemed pretty fitting for the late 2010s sort of emo rap scene.
Yeah, and one thing that I didn't bring up, we were talking about Extension and his documentary, but again, this scene is way more integrated than, and some people argue whether or not you should even categorize emo rap as hip hop, and that's a whole different discussion I'm not going to get into. But what I can say is, as an outsider looking at this stuff on a pretty superficial level, it seems like racially both Extensión's organizations and Little Peep's organizations were way more integrated than anything we would have seen definitely in the 70s, but even more than in the 80s or 90s. The Extensión's producer was white, tons of people in his organization were white, and with Little Peep, lots of black collaborators, people involved on the business side as well. So, you know, the younger generation I'm happy to see is mixing and blending more. And, you know, that raises questions of appropriation and all that stuff. But to me, it's more about the music and the creativity and people coming together to do positive things. One thing that struck me that was different about this movie, both of these movies are made or definitely have the thumbprint of the estate of the deceased main figure. And in Extensión's case, it was his relatively young mother who's, you know, 10 years younger than me, in her mid-40s, you know, trying to run that business she's inherited. And in this case, it was Lil Peep's mother and especially his grandfather that were present, and a very different family background than what Extensión had. What was Lil Peep's family background?
Lil Peep was Swedish American and born and raised on Long Island, New York. You know, his mother and father basically raised him there. And but I think around when he was 12 and 13, his parents' divorce sort of left him bereft of a strong father figure. And from an early point onward, his grandfather was the main father figure that he looked up to, or strong male, guide in his life. And clips from his grandfather doing voiceovers of the letters that he would send Lil Peep or Gus, during his teenage years, and then during his beginning of his journey into the music industry and his career. He does really frequent voiceovers that, were really inspiring to both Gus and to, you know, myself. When I was watching the documentary, it seemed like, although he did not have the best father and the best relationship with him, his grandfather seemed to be someone who is a central point of inspiration in his life, and, you know, provided a great deal of guidance to Gus, and really contributed a lot to the documentary as well.
Yeah, and his background is, his grandfather was somebody who was very socially and politically active, and active internationally. He was very involved in Mexico with left-wing politics. So,
right,
kind of a connection to that 20th century ethos that's more typical of what Let It Roll has covered. But it's almost like having somebody from the Pete Seeger generation, or somebody a little younger than Pete Seeger, but somebody from that activist generation inspired by Pete Seeger and the Weavers, acting as sort of the conscience and the narrator of this documentary, which gives it the mixing of the time elements between Lil Peep, who's so definitively 21st century, and his grandfather, who's very 20th century, and you can see those connections. But let's go ahead and hear our first song. This is Lil Peep, Beamer Boy. That was Beamer Boy by Lil Peep. And that was that on one of his self-released mixtapes, or was that on one of his official albums? I've seen it on California Girls that came out in 2016. So that was a self-released album. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was an EP that preceded his first official 2016 release, Hellboy. And Hellboy was really what started that release of official, studio albums, what you see more often commercially. But Beamer Boy was one of the first songs that, along with Star Shopping, which we'll hear later, that was one of the first songs that really defined his online presence and, started to cultivate his following more or less.
And how was he releasing this stuff online? Is he the prototypical SoundCloud rapper?
He did a lot of networking via the LA Underground, and a lot of the releases early on were in fact through SoundCloud. Some of the slightly larger members of the LA Underground, who were also putting out music in the hip hop scene on SoundCloud, he networked with a couple of them, including producers that ended up helping him with on production with future tracks. But I remember at one point he had only 200 followers on SoundCloud in 2015. And, once he started putting out music and people, more consistently, and people got a gauge for really the unique sound and, very honest, truthful, straightforward approach that his music had, that's when he really started to take off. But it was largely through SoundCloud that he first, networked and spread his music, and then, later moved on to larger platforms and means to distribution.
And so for listeners that are my age and above, explain SoundCloud. What is SoundCloud? How's it different from YouTube and Spotify? What made SoundCloud unique, and why did it attract this? I mean, there was a whole movement of outsider rap adjacent artists that used SoundCloud to reach wide audiences in the 2010s.
Well, I think the main appeal of SoundCloud can really be reflected in Lil Peep's initial approach to music, how largely it was him spending time with his friends, having fun, enjoying himself, and making the music that they wanted to. Now, what SoundCloud does for artists is basically allow for an easily accessible platform for anyone that wants to put out music to easily just set it out there and, have a link or put it somewhere public. Without all the nuances of larger streaming services. Its main focus is to be a platform to spread music, and is often a lot less concerned with the likes of revenue or anything that you would encounter in a more structured environment. It's essentially a great takeoff point for up and coming artists.
And was Peep getting his beats off SoundCloud? Because I know a lot of beat makers just put raw beats on SoundCloud and then sell or license those to rappers, so you might have somebody who licensed the same beat to 5 or 10 different rappers and made the best man succeed. Was that part of how Lil Peep got his beats?
Part of his production was, I believe, in-house from some of his friends, and part of it was through the people that aforementioned that he networked with over SoundCloud. But there were a couple instances where they would find beats. I mentioned this in the documentary, where they find a what they refer to as a smoke perp beat, or a beat that would sound really fitting for the artist, the rapper smoke perp, and they use that in one of the recording sessions. However, people also spent time in person with a lot of people in his, collective, the various collectives that acted as his producers at the time. And then also, networked with producers later on, which was a little bit more of a direct and, curated process than merely just purchasing beats off of SoundCloud.
And tell us about Schema Posse. What was that? And who are some of the people involved in that? And how did Lil Peep get involved with them?
So Schema Posse was around this group of 30 or so rappers that was the first collective Lil Peep associated with. It was essentially, I believe it started because one of Lil Peep's friends was in Schema Posse, got invited. And once they met up and began collaborating, that allowed them to, kind of have a large enough platform to gather people for small shows in various places around the United States, for the likes of Tucson, and then also California. And this was around the time that the previously played song Beamer Boy started to gain traction. That's what really elevated Lil Peep from the rest of the Schema Boy posse. I believe the head of Schema Boys was Jay Green, who appears throughout the documentary and provides a lot of insight into Lil Peep's life and career. So that allowed him to basically begin to move around the United States and get acclimated to the idea of, you know, spending time with an entourage, you know, doing shows in various venues. Although at first they were like rundown houses and small, you know, nothing that's super professional, super planned out. It was a very, very spur of the moment thing, but something that nonetheless helped prepare Pete for like his further career as he, you know, approached stardom.
Yeah, and Jay Green is very much a compelling voice and presence in the documentary. I mean, he frequently, and I'm sure the directors kind of set this up, but he frequently acts as kind of the Greek chorus or the voice of reason or the old friend who wishes Lil Peep had made different decisions. Is that a fair assessment?
I believe so. I saw Jay Green as the one that's rational, down to earth, and most familiar with Peep. I think his skepticism towards Peep's death at the end of the documentary shows how alienating, you know, surrounding oneself with you know, people who want your attention and validation, but won't necessarily immediately look after you. I think the last part of the documentary where, you know, Jay Green essentially highlights that a lot of these people are going to, you know, be false in this documentary. They're going to basically be fake. And I thought that was really compelling. And he seemed like one of the people who knew Pete personally the closest and was, you know, sort of he was wary of Pete's trajectory and especially, you know, where it brought him.
Yeah. And so Lil Peep was only involved with the Schema Posse for what, about a year, and Ghostmane for that same period of time. I mean, how does Ghostmane or Jay Green, I mean, were the other Schema Posse members even comparable to Lil Peep in terms of impact and success? Did he just blow past them all and that's why he left, or were there other reasons that they split?
Well, when Peep started bringing out, you know, releasing singles, and it was pretty based on their online reception, a lot of Peep's, you know, songs began to have impact. That's when not only Peep's satisfaction with himself increased, but everyone else's kind of appreciation for his music in the Schema Posse gave him that sense of validation. And I think Peep wasn't used to having this, you know, like sudden focus, attention from so many people turned on to him. So he was a very, you know, kind and sensitive person, very receptive, and you know, basically always welcomed company, even though a lot of times it was overwhelming for him. And I think Jay Green pointed out to him right before he left Schema Posse, you know, why do you think you have 30 best friends all of a sudden? You know, since you've begun to like gain this online following through your music. Why do you think this occurred so instantaneously? And I think that was a really good word of advice, but Peep's leaving Schema Posse really showed that he was in fact one of the most prominent members within the group at that time, especially because everyone followed suit after that. Schema Posse just gradually dwindled, and then Jay Green mentioned that it was essentially over with pretty shortly after Peep left, because a lot of people, like you mentioned, Ghostmane, a lot of people followed suit, and you know, Schema Posse essentially ended more or less after Peep's departure.
And let's hear a little more Lil Peep. This is White Tea. And that was White Tea from Lil Peep's Schema Posse era. And so what was his next move after he left the Schema Posse? What did he do after that?
Well, that was a bit of a adjustment period for Peep, because that was around early to mid 2016. Peep didn't have a particular place to stay, And really the one person in the world that he spent all his time with and that he could trust was Lil Tracy, who is a, you know, a frequent collaborator and close friend of his. And Lil Tracy appears on White Tee. And in that time during Peep's, you know, phase of homelessness, not having a place to stay, that's when they made White Tee together. It was very instantaneous in terms of the way they, you know, wrote, recorded and produced it. And essentially when that released, that was another, another track that was indicative of Peep's growing success because of its online reception. It's it became further popular. And although he's, you know, obviously released subsequent music that's gotten far more popular, this song was a landmark point in his life that I think really turned things around for him in a period where he was a bit wayward and did not have as much of a support network as he did in, you know, when he was with large groups of people previously. But he was still with, you know, the close group of people that he did stick by, especially the likes of Lil Tracy. Those are the people who were, you know, his closest friends, those that he could trust, and those that especially helped with the likes of his career.
And so Lil Tracy was in another collective called Goth Boy Click, correct?
That's correct. Lil Tracy was the one to introduce Lil Peep to Goth Boy Click.
All right, and tell us a little bit about Goth Boy Click and how they're different from the Schema Posse and how they, what role they played in Lil Peep's career.
Well, Goth Boy Click was the collective that Lil Peep belonged to in the 2016-2017 era of his career, when things really started taking off. Not only did belonging in this collective give him further exposure and further acclimation to a performing environments and essentially going through the process of making music and then also going to various locations around the U.S., for example, Denver, Colorado, and Los Angeles. And that latter location was really where Goth Boy Click comes in, is they were very well known in the L.A. underground scene and really helped Lil Peep further network that way. And he met his manager, who Chase Ortega, who further helped out Peep's, you know, career, aspire to commercial status, who wouldn't have known about Lil Peep if it weren't for his, the fact that he was associated with Goth Boy Click. But the moment Ortega heard Peep's music, that's when he knew that he was different and, basically approached him personally, just wanting to help him with his career rather than to, you know, try and do anything pertaining to contracts or, he really just saw the potential in Peep. When he was with Goth Boy Click and, wanted to personally help, give him an even better platform and, you know, have higher aspirations for his career.
And what were the next steps in his career? What were they able to pull off?
Quite a lot. I believe they were living in a loft for a while, and living, you know, basically paying rent, person to person, a lot of people living in one space. However, I think a lot of the exposure that he got from the underground scene allowed to attract further attention from major labels and people for the sake of PR and other record executives with further music connections, more or less. And then also, I think although Peep wasn't necessarily commercial at this time yet, the underground LA scene definitely helped him network with artists that had reaches basically all across the United States and even on an international level as well, as we see in the coming few months as Lil Peep starts to have a lot of venues in the likes of Russia and Belgium going into 2017, which I thought was a pretty compelling part of the documentary.
Yeah, I thought that was really powerful. I mean, just seeing all of the concert footage from this one, very similar to the Extension one. I mean, there was clearly vibrant scenes of young people really getting into the music, and it reminded me very much of things I'd seen in the punk underground in the 80s and 90s. And there's, you know, in the documentary, people are explicitly connecting this to punk rock, although not necessarily punk rock music, but the ethos, the ideal of being independent, the collective ideals, the idea of taking it directly to the fans. But it seemed like Lil Peep, you know, the more he put himself out there, the more he attracted hangers-on and was not able to cut himself off. Let's take a sponsor break. When we come back, we'll hear more about the downfall of Lil Peep.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, and about the middle of the movie, they talk about a big show that Little Peep's about to do. And I think it's Chase Ortega that he told, I don't think I can do this. And he had apparently taken or been given a different combination of drugs than he was used to taking. And they show the concert footage. And at the beginning, he's barely muttering his way through. And it seemed like his performance practice was to rap over pre-recorded tracks of himself so that he could kind of mumble his way through, and they just turned on the dry ice machine so people couldn't necessarily tell that he wasn't speaking in the mic. But at some point he turned it on, and it ended up becoming one of the most successful showcases for him for the music business. Do you know any more about that incident, or what was your take on that incident?
Watching that and kind of the lead up to it, you know, they showed previous scenes because they had a, you know, camera filming him on the, you know, the commute to the venue, and then, you know, him in the backstage getting prepared and walking out. The whole time I sort of saw it as an inevitable issue that was going to occur once he was on stage. It seemed like, you know, he had a terrible headache, and had a mixture of drugs on the way to the venue. And I think the fact that Chase Ortega, you know, really tried to put his foot in the door and or put a stop to Peep's substance abuse, I think really especially became clear as to like why his incentives for that were because, I mean, this was really starting to get out of hand, especially with Peep. This one scene was, I think, the particular showcase of when I think Peep's, you know, Peep's habits around the people that he was comfortable with, the large groups of friends and his entourage he would have, the doing all the drugs and, you know, having that very flamboyant and, you know, daredevil, reckless attitude that, you know, was associated with Little Peep as opposed to Gus, the person who he actually was. That, you know, that second half of him that really catered to that performative side when he was around all those people, I think it started to take a toll on him. And it was never more clear than that one show. But I think the positive reception he was getting from the audience, even before he sort of, you know, revived himself and found the strength to turn around and finish the show strongly, I think people realized in that moment the amount of unconditional love that was coming from the crowd. I think Peep is one of those artists, especially, you know, in late 2016, early 2017, who was defined by, you know, maybe a small to mediocre sized for commercial standards, but nonetheless dedicated and, you know, loving fan base. And I think that was the main takeaway I got from that, was the fact that they still supported him, even though it was pretty clear he was physically struggling. And I think he found, you know, strength and solace in that as well.
And that leads pretty quickly or quickly thereafter. I don't know if that showcase led directly to it, but then he signs with Autumny and AWOL, AWOL at least is a subsidiary of Sony, and then starts putting together the Come Over When You're Sober album. Like, for you as a fan, when did you first become aware of Little Peep? Was it the Come Over When You're Sober, or had he already penetrated the consciousness of fans in your circles?
To be honest, it was around late 2017. So around the time of, or it was a few, I think it was basically in the wake of the release of Come Over When You're Sober. And it was largely through people that my friends at school and the people that I spent my time around in high school around that time. That's where I was made vaguely aware of Little Peep. And at first, you know, there was a lot of artists circulating at that time, especially in the conversation of who's the, you know, the best out right now with respect to like the, you know, the high schoolers. And although Little Peep was, you know, one of the names in the conversation, I think the way his music personally resonated with some of the people that I personally knew, that became especially clear, I think, mainly in the wake of his death. That's when a lot of people who I was close with, who I'd never known, were that dedicated of Little Peep fans. That's when they started to really, you know, mention his music more frequently, and also, you know, obviously pay homage when it was discovered that Lil Peep, you know, died on November 15th. And, but it was around that time, I think, when, in that high school environment, Lil Peep was definitely one of the names who I'd heard a lot, but he had definitely a much more personal impact, I think, on a lot of people's lives. And, you know, it was crazy how, some of them just went under my nose, and I think, you know, basically very, very personal artists. And, you know, that was especially clear in the wake of his death.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at his discography and his chart placement. I mean, and maybe we should have started with Lil Peep instead of Extensión, because he kind of comes first in the narrative. He was the first one to do releases and the first one to pass away. But, you know, whereas Extensión had these massive number one chart hits, Little Peep was much more underground when he was alive. And in fact, his biggest hit was a posthumous collaboration with Extensión that made, I think, the top 20 in the United States. Although he had number one hits in New Zealand and in Europe and around the world, kind of more of a global performer. What was the take of kids to the posthumous Little Peep Extensión collaboration? Because I know there had been some crosstalk between the two of them, or their camps. Like, they had not been friends or allies when they were alive. Did it seem like a ghoulish cash-in, or did people just dig the song?
To be honest, I think the main way it was portrayed upon its release was the fact that it seemed like a posthumous collaboration that was more thrown together. These were two artists who had very different approaches to kind of this, you know, personal narrative style of alternative hip hop that they had going. Granted, you know, they had their individual unique fans, but there wasn't a lot that was common ground with respect to, you know, actually making music together when they were alive. And I think this was at the moment where it was realized that having those two names on, I think, the release of a single would instantly make an impact on streaming services with respect to numbers. So I view Falling Down and others that I have talked to view Falling Down as more of a, mutually posthumous collab rather than something that seemed planned out when both these artists were still alive.
Yeah, I mean, Extension was alive for that track. And if you listen to other artists, like there's other versions of Falling Down that have Lil Peep's part, but then have somebody else doing the middle sections and the things that Extension did. I found it very dramatic. You could really hear what Extension brought to the table in terms of inventive melody and even his spoken asides. It just creates a much more powerful package than any of the other versions. And their ethos are so different. I mean, Lil Peep essentially is somebody who was too nice to get rid of the hangers-on and ended up, you know, surrounded by bad company and falling into misadventure when there wasn't anybody there who cared enough to look out for him or was capable enough to look out for him. Whereas Extension's problems were with the criminal justice system and his own behavior. But it seemed like Extension was surrounded by a much more caring circle of people than Lil Peep, who just could not clear out the hangers-on. I mean, there's multiple stories of Lil Peep calling somebody crying as he's locked himself in a wardrobe in his own home with nowhere to go because he's got five hangers-on sleeping on his bed, another four of them sleeping on his couch, every chair in the house, and most of the floor space is full of these people that are just glommed onto him. And, you know, just pretty tragic and awful. Every time I watch this, I just want to save these kids. You know, they're young enough to be my kids, and it you just want to reach through the screen and slap them in the face and just like clear these parasites out of your apartment, kid. It's not that hard. But let's go ahead and hear Star Shopping by Lil Peep. And that was Star Shopping by Lil Peep. Tell us about that song. How did it fit into his overall career arc? Who do you work with, etc.?
I view Star Shopping as really that initial spark that lit the flame for his career. This was the 2015 single that released on SoundCloud, you know, under his moniker Lil Peep. And really the acoustic lo-fi mix combined with the sparse drums and really Lil Peep's very straightforward lyrics. That was really a career defining style, I think, for him. And one that he definitely expanded upon and really, really honed in on. But nonetheless, Star Shopping was the foundation for a lot of the sonic approach to music that a lot of his albums had. So I thought that was definitely, that was one of the most significant songs for Peep's initial online presence. Although that's, you know, the 2015 track and, subsequent releases have gotten a little bit more exposure with respect to just having a platform, a larger platform to put them on and spread it to. But Star Shopping was really, if you had to frame it as any one song as the beginning for Lil Peep, it would be that one.
Hmm. And who did he work with on that one? What was different about his approach from his previous recordings?
Well, that was during the Schema Boys era when Star Shopping released, or just prior, actually. But Star Shopping was really what started to gain that traction, essentially in the small, tightly knit community of the SoundCloud underground. The recording process was essentially just him in his room practicing takes and singing, and then taking that and through some online networking on the likes of message boards and whatnot, being able to link up with other people, for example, producers, that allowed him to kind of have this more drawn out process with others who were more practiced in producing and putting out music. And, Star Shopping was essentially the result from that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, multiple people emphasize how Lil Peep was focused on being productive and focused on the creativity, and would essentially, whatever tools at hand is what they were going to use. If he had a crappy microphone, they were going to record with a crappy microphone. If the best camera they could get was an old VHS, video camera, that's what they were going to make the video on. And it totally fit with his lo-fi aesthetic and the lo-fi aesthetic that fit at the time, and definitely made a certain magic. But then the documentary gets into kind of the origin story of Lil Peep and what exactly it was that happened with his dad. Although multiple people in the documentary allude to even worse things having happened with his dad, but I'm not going to speculate because we don't have any idea what it was. But what we do know that happened with Lil Peep and his dad that precipitated his parents' divorce is pretty heinous. What was his dad doing that caused Lil Peep to basically blow the whistle on him to his mom?
His dad was cheating, basically, to put it simply. He was, contacting another girlfriend that he had while Lil Peep was in the car as a young adolescent. And, his father would tell him not to tell his mom about, contacting this other woman. But I think Peep's allegiance really to his mother, someone who had always cared for him and been there for him, it really prevailed in that moment. And Peep took, exhibited a great deal of courage and bravery for a 12-year-old to basically run into the house from where he was with his dad in the car and tell his mom about, this other person. And, although that was, I think, definitely the right call to make on Peep's behalf, it was very brave. It did result in the relationship between his parents falling apart, or at least it was a major contributing factor. And you're right, they mentioned that there could have been possibly more heinous things that his dad did, and they didn't go into a large amount of detail on it on the documentary. But his father drifted away from him pretty soon after that key event, and that's sort of framed as one of the events pertaining to his family life, his parents' marriage that Peep had a role in. And I thought that was a particular turning point. It seems like things changed a lot personally for Lil Peep after his parents' divorce.
Yeah, for sure. And when you look at the footage of him, the family home movies of him as a baby, it reminds me so much of Kurt Cobain's childhood. And before Cobain's parents' divorce, where you've got this beautiful little blonde kid that's clearly beloved and seemingly part of a loving family. And then you end up with this kid who's got, all the symptoms of having been traumatized by a broken home. And I can't remember which song it is, but one of Lil Peep's big lines is, "I've been on my own since I was 9 years old." And it makes you wonder, is that around the time, like, was his father talking to side pieces in front of him the whole time? And Lil Peep just started to realize what was going on when he was 9 or 10. But to me, just the audacity and just to assume that your kid is either too stupid to notice what you're doing or won't care, it's just so awful. And you can see where that would really mess a kid up. But let's go ahead and hear our last cue. And this is Save That Shit by Lil Peep.
cause I can make you right. I can make you this, baby, I can make you that. I could take you there, but baby, you won't make it back. Growing sick of this, and I don't wanna make you sad.
And that was Save That Shit by Lil Peep. And that's going to be one of my favorite Lil Peep songs. I don't know if, you know, I'm playing that in the car with my 10-year-old. We both enjoy it. It's not always, you know, got some curse words in there and some concepts we've had to discuss. But it's a heck of a song. But let's talk about this last phase. Like, who's I Love McConaughey? And how did he get involved and what kind of work? And what did Lil Peep's management do to try to get him away from the goth boy clique and the situation in L.A.?
I Love McConaughey actually had somewhat of a commercial presence at a time. He was another rapper, but he had a little bit of a more melodic approach and was basically he had a very separate vein of music. But I think when him and Lil Peep got the chance to meet up and make music together, because I Love McConaughey saw his music and saw a really unique figure behind the music and expressed a great deal of interest with this rising star. And I think when they met up, I Love McConaughey definitely in the documentary especially expressed kind of the idea of that they both seemed like sort of like hurt souls and sensitive people who found a lot of solace and comfort within each other's presence, especially when they were making music. And I think around this time, the situation with the goth boy clique, where they were getting particularly big, like you mentioned, Lil Peep had a difficult time saying no. Every big scene involving his entourage, it's just shown people strewn out everywhere. And Lil Peep in the midst of it, and just a lot of times it seems like he's sort of dissociative. It seems as if he's sort of removed from the scene. And around this time, you kind of start to see that this like outside pressure is really not only affecting it continuously affecting his decisions with respect to drug use, but also, his outward appearance and his general personality, where in an interview, while he's on the Come Over When You're Sober Part 1 tour, he mentions how the anxiety just keeps increasing and worsening. And it's pretty clear that the people that he's surrounding himself with definitely aren't helping him.
Yeah, well, they seem to be trying. I mean, like, who's Sarah Stinnett of First Access Entertainment? Like, and what did she try to do? Like the whole bit where they get Lil Peep to Europe and hook him up with the fashion world, that seemed to be Sarah Stinnett's attempt to rescue him. Do you know any more about her in the context of the music biz and also Lil Peep in particular?
I'm not particularly familiar with Sarah Stinnett's status as a music executive, but her role in propelling Lil Peep's image and music to a more worldwide context, especially with the venues that he was playing, and especially, like you mentioned, the whole vein of fashion that he was exhibiting interest in, definitely was an effort to sort of use Peep's exposure to his benefit, rather than further catering to the hangers-on. When Sarah sees the situation with everyone in Peep's house and constantly relying on him for the likes of clothing and for certain things, a lot of it involving money, Sarah mentions that we have to get Lil Peep out of LA, and that's, I think, that played a large role. Getting him from LA to London played a role in not only his career, but also in just sort of the general direction that he took with his life and his interests. I thought it was interesting that he wanted to get into fashion, and that occurred largely in that period of time where he was spending a lot of time in Europe doing magazine shoots and whatnot.
Yeah, and it's interesting. He's in this period where he's traveling to Europe. He's doing the fashion things. It seems like Sarah Stinnett has, you know, a hand on his career and is steering him away from the most dangerous aspects of his lifestyle. He's still working with Smoke Kosak, the SoundCloud producer out of Memphis that had done a lot of his early beats, but now he's also working with, you know, some big time people. Producer, I can't remember his name. Oh, Rob Cavallo, who had done stuff with My Chemical Romance and Linkin Park, which seems like a totally logical move. So it's, you know, this is a really exciting time, and it seems like things are just going to get bigger and bigger for Lil Peep. And he decides to do one more tour with the GBC crew. Tell us about that and what happened on that tour.
Well, that was the sort of the mid to late 2017 interview, and or that was the mid to late 2017 tour, and it was supposed to be sort of a smaller situation involving Lil Peep and Lil Tracy, but you know, essentially Peep was touring in places where he couldn't be in close proximity to the person trying to, you know, get him to restrain his habits, especially pertaining to substances, you know, his manager, Chase Ortega. However, they got a new tour crew, for this, you know, it wasn't the crew that really knew the ropes and knew what to do, in certain situations. And, the production manager, you know, at the time for, you know, this tour crew, the Last Goth Boy Click tour, mentioned that it was, you know, one of the worst, most disorganized tours that they'd ever been on. You know, they had people doing, assuming multiple jobs that they, you know, weren't supposed to be worrying about because others were just incompetent. And, you know, that contributed to part of that sense of anxiety that he felt, and sort of the growing claustrophobia, even though it was, you know, supposed to be just him and a, you know, Lil Tracy and a close group of, you know, people that he trusted. However, you know, for 2 months on that tour, it was pretty much, it was concerts that, you know, seemed to go well in terms of reception, but in between that, it was, nonstop, you know, partying and also like organizing things for the subsequent tours. It was a very tiring experience from what it sounded like. And, this was the tour that eventually culminated in Peep's death one night when he overdosed on fentanyl. Something that he had was laced, and he was out cold for five plus hours on a tour bus. And you know, he had a blanket on. And go ahead.
Yeah, while the party continues around him, it was really chilling when his friend, who wasn't there, was describing, you know, looking at the phone footage, you know, that came out, and it's clear that Lil Peep is in the same exact posture for hour after hour as this party just goes on all around him. It's really horrific and ghoulish.
Absolutely. And you know, it's even more chilling looking back on it, knowing full well that in those shaky phone videos that were released, all those, you know, very quick pans to Lil Peep, or you know, when he shows up in the background on the couch, you see, you know, you mentioned that exact same position, and you know, I think that at that point he's gone, and yet, you know, it's all on video, and it's all, everything's still kind of happening, amassing around him without knowledge that he's not okay in that moment. And it's I don't know, that was definitely the most chilling part of the documentary.
Yeah, it was very upsetting, and it ultimately resulted in a wrongful death suit. I know that Chase Ortega was separated from the wrongful death suit. Sorry about the dog, and not you know, held liable. But I don't know if anybody else is still on the hook. The suit's continuing. So, yeah, just a tragic end, and it really, you know, we've seen Lil Peep's music kind of endure. It's only been a few years since his death, 7 years since his death, but it seems like new generations of fans are being drawn to his music. How do you think Lil Peep is going to be remembered in the next, not forever, but say in the next 10, 15 years?
I think Lil Peep is, again, going to be remembered by the sort of the spirit of kindness and straightforwardness that he he exudes, not only in his music, but also just in the impact that he's had on his, you know, on his fan base. You know, he's commonly seen as someone who is, you know, very, very soft and kind hearted. And although his music, you know, has a certain like flair to it that is reminiscent of other genres of hip hop and, you know, the likes of trap music, I think Lil Peep really had a unique crossover going that few other artists could really cater to, or, you know, say that they've done. I thought that upon first hearing Peep's music, and, you know, especially listening to it more extensively, he had a very unique approach to the likes of emo rap and alternative hip hop that really culminated in a sound that no other artist has. And I honestly think his influence in the next 10 or 15 or so years will definitely remain prominent. It seems like there's a great deal of appeal in the lo-fi acoustic approach to hip hop. And I think in the years since Peep's passing, that's only proven, you know, based on the online presence of alternative hip hop, it's only proven to be, you know, more and more influential and enjoyable from a growing fan base around the world.
Yeah, so far so good. And so for Ivan DeHaas, I'm Nate Wilcox. We've been discussing the Lil Peep documentary, Everybody's Everything. And next week we'll be back to wrap up the Three Kings of Emo Rap series with a look into Juice WRLD, Into the Abyss.
Follow the Let It Roll podcast on Twitter at Let It Rollcast, and check out our website at letitrollpodcast.com. Next week, Nate and Ivan conclude the Three Kings of Emo Rap series with a look at the Juice WRLD documentary, Into the Abyss. Let It Roll is a Pantheon podcast, and you can listen to more great podcasts at www.pantheonpodcast.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.